Hello and welcome to the Stranger Things After Show, presented by Netflix. I'm your host, Jesse Janity, joined in studio by Roxy Stryer.
I'm stealthy, like a ninja.
Tiana Hobson.
Fireball over protection, always.
And Zach Wilson.
I must have rolled a 20. This show is freaking awesome.
Stranger Things After Show, presented by Netflix.
So we're here to talk about Stranger Things, the first episode, The Vanishing of Will Byers. It was incredible. I felt like I was watching a movie.
I completely agree. This show, I'm so excited for the rest of these episodes after this one because it honestly, like, on my toes, on the edge of my seat the entire time.
I'm actually just sad that there's only 7 more to go. Like, we only get 8 episodes, and I'm really sad about that already. We're only on episode 1.
The show, it had this build. Like, I was in from that first cold open, and then as it went, it, like, just kept getting me more and more interested until the end. I'm just like, I want to binge it all right now. We have to come in here.
Yeah, thank God it's a binge show.
We have to talk about it. After each episode, make sure you guys join us here in studio. We're going to be talking about all things Stranger Things. And shout out to Netflix for this original series because, honestly, I want to talk about the tone, the costumes. I felt like I was in the 80s. I felt like my dad was going to come walk out and be like, hey!
It was very authentic, and it reminded me a lot. I know we talked about this, you know, of 80s classic movies, and you're just watching even the cinematography and, like, the theme of things, like, when they're all riding their bikes down. Mm-hmm. I was like, E.T., you know?
Yeah, that the bike, the big honking light on the front of them. Like, everything about this felt like the 80s. And, like, I was just excited that this show was coming out, so I, like, went back and, like, rewatched E.T.
Yeah.
And Goonies, like,
oh, yeah,
before, like, to get ready and get myself back in that 80s mindset. And it so recaptures it. The music...
Yes.
Felt like it. The music feels like something out of, like, Tron.
Yeah,
in, like, the best way, that, like, in a good way. But, like, it's such a perfect throwback.
You're just a big Toto fan, be honest.
Oh yeah. Oh my God, I even, like, wrote it down. I was like, there's nothing more 80s than making out to Toto.
I have to be dead serious with you guys. When Toto started playing, I looked over at Zach and he was doing this amazing little jig, like, grooving out to grooving. It.
I cannot deny.
Yeah, and talk about the 80s. How come I can't have Nancy's Closet? I need to raid that for some sort of costume party. It was incredible.
Or I felt like Freddy Krueger was going to come out when Nancy and Steve were making out. And, like,
yeah,
all of a sudden through the bed. And there were so many times that I jumped, too. But let's talk about the boys. So we meet our main characters. We meet Mike, Will, Lucas, and Dustin.
Mm-hmm.
Who, I love Dustin, by the way.
He's your favorite?
I don't know if he's my favorite. Yeah, he probably is my favorite.
The bloopless thing going on with his
missing
teeth.
He's a superhero, you know what I mean, in his mind. He can do the arm thing.
Yeah. Oh, that freaked me out.
I love that a bully came, approached him, and was like, do the arm thing!
And then got grossed out by it.
Yeah.
You asked for that, dude.
It was cool, but freaky.
Dude, these kids don't have cell phones or YouTube. That's the grossest thing they've ever seen.
That's true.
That's true.
That's definitely true.
Very true.
I bet some of them flip their eyelids, do weird arm stuff, weird hands.
Yeah, when there's no TV or internet readily available, you gotta make your own fun.
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
They played Dungeons & Dragons for 10 hours that day. So yeah, they were definitely creating their own fun.
I mean, that sounds right up my brother's alley.
I think my favorite one of the boys was Mike because I feel like he's the moral compass of the show. You know, we see with the boys playing later on that he's the one who's like, okay, we've got to be truthful, we've got to be honest, and the one who's trying to do right by Will. So you have your,
like,
favorite,
Mike.
I've got mine. Yeah. I would, and I do.
So we take place in Hawkins, Indiana in November 6, 1983.
Mm-hmm.
We meet the four boys. They're down in the basement playing Dungeons and Dragons and talking about what were some of the creatures that they had.
Well, the big one, I mean, like, that wasn't the trilobites, but, like, they're just a little weak monsters.
Yeah.
But then they brought out the Demogorgon, and I immediately just went into super nerd mode, and, like, because the Demogorgon is, first of all, if you look at it, it looks like a two-headed monkey octopus. Is the best way I can describe. But
valid description.
Yeah.
The Demogorgon, he's a demon prince, and he's the lord of all that swims in darkness. This is actually, mm-hmm, those are actual titles.
Are you a D&D player?
Not intensely. I didn't grow up playing it.
But, it was like more of a war cry. Again, 90s baby.
Yeah. But this what I thought was interesting about this character is that he's a self-proclaimed, like, that he gave himself that title just by taking it with his power. Mm. And with this humanoid monster running around in the woods and everything that escaped, who knows if that's going to become important as we go forward, if it's somehow going to... There's a lot more layers that they've, like, hidden in here. So I think the Demogorgon might be important. Yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree.
In some sort of reference to what is actually happening with them right now.
Yeah.
You think it's foreshadowing?
Foreshadow.
Well, I'm wondering how magical it is. You know, it kind of brought me to a place of almost like, if you've ever watched Jumanji, and like the board game, it opens up. Because one thing I love that they did was, we saw later on when they were talking to one of the officers, but they referred to one of the actual streets as...
Mirkwood.
Like, a magical.
But then repeated
place.
Themselves multiple times. Like, I'm sorry, what did you say? Mirkwood. Duh. Did you not hear me the first time?
This, though, you
me
guys.
Too.
Like, my world inside my house, when I would go outside, like, that was the world. So monsters and demons were, I was a Buffy head. You know what I mean? Monsters and demons were around me.
And we saw that there was a fort, too.
Yeah.
And all
which
of those
was
different
really
things.
Good fort, I must say. That was.
I agree. They did a really great job capturing the child in all of us and making us remember, like, holy crap, that's something that I definitely used to do as a kid. But not in a way where I was looking down on these kids, more and I was like, yeah, rooting for them the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, just naming a street that doesn't really have a name. So you're like, no, we call it Mirkwood. Like, you don't know that? Like, that's what it's called.
You didn't get that email?
Well, apparently someone didn't get an email apparently when you're playing Dungeons & Dragons, what was it? It's fireball before
overprotection.
It's offense versus defense. Like, what do you want to be safe and like keep everybody protected and then play the next move, or do you just throw all your offense at this guy and hope for the best?
But I'm kind of surprised, based off of Joyce's description of her son, that he is the kind of guy that wouldn't go for protection. She seems to think he's one way, and then when we hear that he is throwing fireball, then maybe she doesn't know him as well, or...
Well, he did it for his friends, though. It was like almost like an honor thing. Mm-hmm. So he's the one.
Yeah, he sacrificed himself so that his friends could stay alive in that moment.
And now they need to do the same thing.
Yes.
Mm. Honorable. It's honorable also, mention.
I'm not playing no Dungeons and Dragons.
it's also D&D is about, it's so much about escapism and like forming a character that's who you want to be and who you see yourself as, even if that's not who you are, like outwardly. So like he's shy kid. I was way shyer than I am now as a kid. Like,
no,
I would
really?
Have been like, I've been like hiding in like a closet. But like this kid, like, so he may want to be the kind of guy who would just rush in and throw a fireball, but he in real life, if presented with that in real life, would throw up a shield.
Oh yeah, all the time. I'm teleporting places. I'm leaving that at my age right now.
But we even saw what he did though when presented with a problem.
That's true.
That he was ready to throw his version of a fireball.
As they chanted around. Is that the gunshot?
Yeah. Yeah, that was my pun about him loading the bullets.
Okay,
yeah,
got it.
He didn't get it.
No. I got you, Roxy.
Thank you.
So, obviously, we find out Mike tells his mother that they've been playing for 10 hours, and she's like, what?
Yeah.
Go home.
Get out of here. So, Mike goes upstairs with his family. Lucas and Dustin, they go home. And as Will's on his way home, riding his little bike, we hear these noises, and we hear this, it was almost like a bubbling, breathing
freaky
noise. Yeah,
freaky.
Like
freaky.
Very demonic, and we see that there's something in the woods. He gets to his house, he's freaking out, nobody's home, and he looks out the window, and we see a shape. So it is almost kind of human-esque form.
Yeah.
From what
It looked like sort of green-esque, like the way that they kept it like muted in the background sort of reminded me of
Swamp Thing
or... like Signs a little bit.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Just the monster design, but like we can't see it in focus. So.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it was humanoid, so it could like that. So it means that it at least is like bipedal and could theoretically have been a converted human.
Hmm.
Ooh.
Yeah, I love the way that they did shoot this so we don't know exactly what is going on. Of course, it's so much scarier when you're uncertain what this being, what this force is.
Yeah.
I love that. And how dark it was the whole time and how we all kind of kept looking at each other like, "What are you seeing this? What is it even that we are seeing?"
That was the style like we seem to know all about in like the 70s and the 80s. Like the Jaws mentality of like, don't show... It's way scarier to not see the shark.
You'll get a good jump jump out of this.
Yeah, but now it's like, see, most shows and movies, it's like CGI, like show it as quick as possible, but it's that restraint that delivers it so well at the end.
I want to talk about when we were watching the episode, it was right when he had looked out the front door and the tall figure went by, and he made the lock come undone, almost magnetically it looked.
Yeah.
At that time, Zach dropped a pen in here. We all were like, "What?"
That is a good story.
I was on edge during that whole scene. I jumped like 5 times. So thanks, Zach.
Sorry, Tiana.
So I want to reference that almost to the beginning opening scene, because that's where we first were introduced to this creature thing. We see this guy running through this laboratory, which is apparently on the outside of Hawkins, and we hear that breathing pattern again, and all of a sudden,
gone. Is this the Stranger Thing? Like, is that what we can call whatever the force is that's working here?
I think Stranger Things happen.
Yeah, I think right now strange things are happening, but you know, eventually we'll get to that even stranger thing.
So this is just a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. This is the thing.
This is the thing. All right.
And then we're going to get to Stranger Things.
Yeah, that was an amazing way to open us up, though, with that, whatever it is that you're calling back to. I don't even know how to describe it. Because when I was taking notes watching this and so into it, I wrote down, I don't even know how to, what is this? What are we even calling this? So,
because even later on, we get to the laboratory and we see, again, where they're doing this, like, search through it. It's like this breathing skin on the wall, and
like
they're like
goo or something, you know, or like a mold almost. Like the building had started molding, but then the mold was alive because it was like kind of breathing on its own.
But you're describing flubber, and this is like scary.
But it was scary flubber.
Yeah. Well, scary flubber. This is cute, so she just makes everything cute.
Sorry, my references are
the thing, aka
movies.
Dark flubber.
Yeah,
dark flubber.
I've never thought of it that way, but that's totally what the thing is.
This is the
unofficial sequel to Flubber, where it turned evil. But I love, like, if you go back and you look at it, like especially the first splotch that you see is absolutely either like a heartbeat or like breathing. Mm-hmm. Like, it is alive. Whatever it is, it's alive.
And hopefully not create more.
Whatever version of alive it breathing means. It could be dead, but come back or whatever it is.
Yeah, but then they go back, when they go deeper and you see that, like, it looked like a pod that had been ripped open.
Yeah.
Like almost like a cocoon.
Yeah, it reminded me of from Independence Day when they had stumbled across that one from the original. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm extremely excited to see where this creature is going to, like, I hope we see it before episode, like, at least 3 or 4. Like, I want it to be a part of it. I hope he ain't gonna be some creepy through the whole season, but
I am glad at least we got to see it come back a little bit. It wasn't just mentioned at the top and then we left it alone. I know this is a binge series, but sometimes you just want there to be answers in one episode. And I like that even though we didn't get exact answers, we did get appearances, which is cool.
And we did see Will, you know what I mean? Like, we were saying, like, his mother thinks that he is this, you know, oh, he's so shy, he would never. And then
Every parent say that
I mean,
about their
child.
True.
Oh my
he
God, you just sounded like
rifle.
Every Jewish mom that I've ever met. He would never, honey, never.
Well, honey, he knows how to load and lock a gun.
He did way more than I would ever be able to do in that situation. Like, this kid is tough. This is somebody I think that we can root for because he is willing to run, but then he's also willing to fight. So he's smart, and I'm thinking that we don't know where he is, but wherever he is, if there is a way to get out or if there is a way to succeed, my money's kind of on him.
Yeah. In that moment, we see, you know, obviously this creature comes into the shed with him and the light keeps intensifying. So there's some sort of magnetic, or it's all about energy, because again, with the lock coming off, the light every time, even when we see Chief Hopper, when he goes back in there, the light again starts flickering, and then it gets so intense and then he disappears. Almost UFO-y. Yeah.
Right.
So now some sort of wondering, abduction. Is this a monster? Is this an abduction? Is this social services / the whatever team that is.
Has he changed forms? Are we thinking that he's poofing, but really he's sinking into something?
Ooh.
I had so many thoughts about that, because it looks like they're just gone, but we know that things are never really just gone. So are they teleporting? Are they dissolving?
Are they like phased between like
light?
Like, are they're there, but they're in UV light now, so you can't see. They can call you and breathe on your phone.
Right. Well, we don't even even know if that is
him.
That's
true. That's very true.
But I do want to say that a mother knows their kid's breath. I know that sounds weird, but I feel like she knows.
Yeah. Well, I want to get to that in a second. But before we do that, so Will, gone.
Yeah.
We don't know where he is. So we meet some of the family. So as the kids were at the house, we met the Wheelers. The Wheelers consist of is Mike's house. And we meet his mom and dad, who didn't really seem too fazed that...
The dad was weird about it.
He's very distant, I feel.
Enjoy your chicken.
Yeah. He doesn't ever look up from the newspaper either. You know, he's constantly not fully there. And I think that the wife is... frustrated with him about it because she's raising three kids alone.
Yeah. Sounds like a typical American household.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You can tell the selfishness of everybody in this situation.
Oh my gosh.
There's the dad and he's in his own world. He's like the kind of dad who you feel like is answering emails at the table in current day. You've got the sister who's off in La La Boy Land.
On Tinder.
Yeah, she's Tinder. She's swiping, you know, she's going on Tinder.
But also studying.
Yeah, but also she's a good student. Kind of.
Swiping left in the 80s was a lot more complicated. You actually to push a person.
Wait, and how 80s is this? Very full house of them because the little girl who plays Holly is actually her and her sister switch out.
They're twins.
That's amazing. That's really cool. That is very full house. And then you've got the mom who is trying to keep this family together as a unit, but I'm not exactly sure if she has this the way that she thinks she does. Like, she doesn't really have control of that.
I think it's that reaction. Like, whenever anything bad happens, a lot of people have that very selfish reaction of, well, how does this affect me?
Mm.
Especially in a case where, like, they can't necessarily do anything about it. It's, well, okay, so then what do I have to do with this? And the dad is basically like, it doesn't affect me. It's just my kid's dumb friend because it seems like kind of a jerk. The sister is like just seeing how it's going. She's got a curfew now.
Right.
And so she's only seeing how it's directly affecting her.
Right. To play devil's advocate for a second, I don't think that they understand the severity of the situation. Nobody seems to be under the impression that this boy is actually gone. That he either has been taken by his father or a relative or is off playing hooky. So I think that if the mom, the dad, the sister, everybody thought of this the way the boys thought of this, then we would be sounding the alarms a little more.
I agree with you on that because when I was watching the mom, kind of her reaction was like, I'm the only one reacting to this in a, you know, in the right way. My thought was the boy was last at your house. Like, and as a mom, how would you feel if you're now, you know, your kid was at their friend's house and then on his way home, like, and you're not even trying to help with the search give answers or anything.
But at the same time, that was also after Joyce had called her and made it seem like, oh no, nothing's wrong.
Why do you think she did that?
Because I don't think she was ready for, I don't think she was ready to accept that yet. I think it was kind of like, if I say that, she's going to freak out, then it's so many people freaking out, and what if he's at the clubhouse?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's saying it out loud makes it real, and so she has to, like, give herself an explanation. And that way she can let it be, maybe it is that he went to school early.
I looked at it completely differently.
Really?
I thought of this as, we don't know her past situation with Lonnie. We don't know what's happened before. But I felt like she didn't want to seem like an unfit mother who didn't know where her child was at that moment. Mm. So she didn't say it out loud because maybe there have been things that have happened in the past where she has lost control or hasn't known where somebody was. And she didn't want the town to paint her in that light yet.
I can see that too.
Especially for her initial thing to be like, oh, he went to school early. So you think of the best thing that your son could have done in that moment.
And it's a small town, so clearly everyone knows everyone. She's could be one of the only single parents there, and she's calling a mom who has, you know, a co-parent who's not really fully there, but you know,
you
on
see
paper
impressive.
You want to seem impressive, like, no, I can do what you're doing too, and just it be me.
Especially if she's had this absentee parent who maybe people judge very negatively. We don't know much about
and also it. Judging her because she's working and she's telling her son, like, I need you to watch him because I can't. And I would assume as a mother, you know, you would think like, okay, I want to be there from when my son comes home from school. And you would feel guilty being at work while your son's home alone.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then to think like something could have ever happened. The fact that your son didn't show up after 8 p.m. at night and he's that age in the 80s, especially, like, I would choke just like her. So it was just, yeah. It could be either of those two things. I totally see both of them.
And talk about choking just like her. Can we please for 1 second just round of applause for Winona Ryder, who just, I thought that her performance was flawless from the first second we saw her on screen the entire way through, her relationship with her son, both of her sons, but especially with her with Jonathan, watching that. Oh my God, when you could see her choking up, I felt like I was going to tear up for her, because what a horrible situation to be in.
Mm-hmm. You could feel all of the pain, like all of the pain of losing a son was written right on her face the entire episode. And the way that it elevated as it went, like the panic when we saw, like after the flashback, when we saw her open the thing, like that panic, you can see it's real.
Exactly.
It's there.
Exactly.
And even Jonathan, who is Joyce's son and Will's brother, that family dynamic for me is. It really sucked me into the show.
Uh-huh.
Because you see that older brother, I should have been there. The responsibility, dad's not here. Okay, him getting upset with his mother and trying to calm her down. You see who really, actually, it's interesting that you brought that up, because now you kind of do see who might run the household.
Right, yeah. Absolutely. And what was crazy is that I cared about every single character. I cared about the mom's reaction. Then I cared about the older brother, Jonathan's reaction. Then I even cared if they could get the dad on the phone. And then I even cared about the dad's girlfriend. And I was like, who is this girl?
Yeah, who's this girl?
When do I get to meet her? Yeah, I don't know why, but somehow they made me care about her. And I was like, okay, she's coming. Somewhere down the line, we're going to see her in some episode.
I do feel like it's important. It will be important that Lonnie wasn't there. Like, there's a reason that he's not reachable at that moment. Not just, like, oh, convenience, so that she's, like, panicking. Like, if she would be panicking even more if she could reach him. There's a question there that, like, we need answers.
Do you think that there is any possibility that he is linked to his son disappearing?
It's possible. Like, why this creature would go to that specific garage and, like, abduct a kid is very questionable. Like what it was the motive for going after him? It seemed to follow him once he was in the house. Like, it wasn't just, like, he stumbled upon it.
So you think he's chosen?
It's very possible.
Because it went from the woods to the house to, okay, now I'm coming in the house, and now I'm going to come in the back shed.
I didn't know if that was just, it had been spotted, so now it needed to take care of who had spotted it, or if he was seeking out Will the entire time, you know? So I'm not sure if Will was chosen or Will was very unfortunate, wrong time, wrong place.
We know that it has a connection to a very similar age, another child. I would have to think that it's looking for its child. If it's an intelligent creature, not just a mindless monster, it is maybe looking to find its child, to protect its child, and it's looking for someone that's somewhat similar, and it happens upon Will.
And you know, another quote from the show that really stuck with me was when Joyce said, I feel that he is still here, close by. And I'm always a mother's intuition, because trust me, I've experienced it in real life. But for her to say that, I don't know, I feel like it's interesting. Then you brought up the other dimension thing. And then that phone call, I'm wondering, is this like particles? And then we meet the boys that go to school the next day, and we meet Mr. Clark, who very excitedly has set up this radio system where they can communicate or listen to anything, like, from phone calls to outer space to...
These, like, think big.
They've mastered their Aussie accent.
An Aussie accent is very hard to
do. Can any of you guys nail it?
I'm not embarrassing myself.
Shrimp
again.
On the Bobby.
No, I really tried it, but the thing is I can't. It sometimes sounds too English
not going to embarrass myself.
You gotta stop. Nope.
They just really
Fosters.
I actually stopped for a second and took a minute at the actors here and was like, "Wow, very talented young men."
Yes,
way to go. No, all the kids were great. Like, there was no bad performances from the kids. It's always
anybody for that matter. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. But it's with kids, it's always like sort of a gamble.
Of course.
These kids did a great job.
I completely agree. But what I liked about this scene was we got a very clear picture of what kind of teacher this was. This was the exact kind of teacher that you wanted to have growing up, who actually gave a crap about what you wanted to learn, looked into it, and helped you develop knowledge and growth. So I feel like we understand who this is on the show. I don't know where he's going, but I think he might be an important role model for them to have at some point.
Yeah. I feel like he's going to be looked at as a bad guy. in a sense. I don't know why this feeling is coming to me, but I feel like he's going to be kind of put in this thing, in this situation where he's going to have to help the kids, but at the same time protect himself because whoever these people are out
there. Does it have to do with his mustache?
Well, it is very...
Maybe it does. It was very 80s.
So I want to talk about Chief Hopper. So, because as we were talking about, you know, maybe the other people feeling like, okay, well, this doesn't really affect me. The kid could be running around anywhere. We see that with Chief Hopper. Chief Hopper, at first, he's like, what did he say? Mondays are for coffee and...
donuts?
No, the mornings are for coffee and contemplation. I did write down a line from the show.
And Roxy said, that is...
Yeah, so just in the way that the teacher is the exact kind of teacher you want to have, I was like, that is the worst kind of dude. Oh, he's just the worst. I mean, you guys know, people who are very dedicated towards your career, when you look at somebody like that and you're like, wow, that's who's running-ish around here?
Yeah.
That's who's
in charge.
We're screwed. Like that, I don't know, it could be a messy situation, but he did surprise me by the end of the episode.
Me too. He got really, like, with it and quick, and after he went into that shed, I just had to ask this question because I read this a really weird way. He was in the shed, and he's looking at all the scratches, marks, and stuff, and then his partner comes in, and he's like, I've been calling you. Mm-hmm. You weren't answering. Was that he was just so focused on what he was looking at that he didn't hear, or was he in, like, a different dimension type of thing where, like, he couldn't hear past this barrier?
I felt it was similar to that.
It was strange because we also didn't hear it. It would be one thing if we heard him calling
like
him,
faint call.
And we didn't see him responding, but we didn't hear it either, so I feel like they were putting us in this room. If we're in this room as well, we're not hearing what's going on out there.
Yeah. But I also want to go back to hear, was there a humming sound? Because I know the light was reacting, but was that humming sound, like, in his ear? Was that something that
was... It was sort of an electrical hum, ostensibly from the light bulb, but... If there's some sort of, like, energy field, like, in this, like, is it a garage or a barn?
It looks like a shed.
Shed. If there's, like, an energy field, like, sort of covering it, it would explain, the dog was barking at it. So there's something there. There is something, the creature or Will's, like, ghost, for lack of a better term, is there, and the dog senses it. Because, you know, animals are just more in tune with these, like, next level things. And it could easily block out sound waves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is why I asked how you guys interpreted it, because Joyce does say she feels like he's still near, and the last place we saw him was in that shed, so what if he hasn't even left there?
Well, and instead of thinking also that being something having to do with the shed, we also don't know right now what's in the shed. There could physically be something inside. It could have nothing to do with that space, but what is in that space that could also relocate? So,
or below or above. Because we also see as who called who? It was Joyce calling someone. As that happened, we see this room of just operators who are listening in on people's phone calls.
Was that the NSA?
I mean, it was apparently Social Security. It was the social workers, right? Uh-huh. World listening to picking up these calls who clearly
are not social workers,
right?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I can—I just want to call them the company. Yeah. Like that's like such a standard like sci-fi thing. Like if it's a mysterious clandestine evil organization,
the lab,
legitimately. I'm trying to put evil in there somewhere.
I don't know what to make of this lab. I don't know what to make of Connie, I think is how she introduced herself, the social worker. I'm not sure what they're after. We know that somehow they're linked to Eleven based on that one line, where did the girl go? I haven't put the pieces together whatsoever. Are any of you guys clearer on the situation yet?
Well, let's talk through it. So we see that they go into that lab with the breathing... skin thing.
Yeah.
Flubber. Wall, and this broken into paw.
Angry flubber.
Call it by its name. Come
we
on.
We hear that that this thing and the girl exited here. So now we meet Eleven, who's running through the woods and stumbles across this diner and befriends this guy.
Benny's!
And he takes care of Eleven at first and kind of realizes, okay, this kid's been... Well, thinks he's a boy. He is a boy, but it's really a girl.
Reason for that, I think. Continue.
So within that, I loved how at first it was very aggressive with her, and then kind of catered to her and really took care of her in that moment.
Well, because I think he clearly thought that this was a kid from the streets that was stealing his food, and then realized this is somebody who is actually in need of help. So he's a good guy. He just at first was a little annoyed.
Yeah, and the great way of questioning the child too, you know, I'm a big believer in discipline. So I love that he took the hamburger away, because it isn't right. You are here, you are a child, and you do have to understand that this is dangerous, me not knowing who you are. I need to figure out how you can get to where you need to be, so I'm going to take this away from you.
Mm-hmm.
And she responded to him, and she started, built this rapport with him. And I loved that. And then the social workers.
Yeah.
Poor old Benny Hammer.
Poor old Benny. Because
I saw that coming from a million miles away, though.
I know. But yeah. I felt like Benny could have been a great, amazing character and always have looked out for Eleven. But yeah. Never mind.
But not going to be that way. No. How much do we think Eleven is capable of communicating verbally right now? Do we think that she is more capable, or do we think that she is restricted to the few words at this time?
I think she's capable, but she's hesitant, because if she's been locked up in this lab for however many years, the only human and adult interactions she's had are with people that she can't trust. So I think once she started building that rapport with Benny, she did get, you know, more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I think that she could speak more.
Or is her conversation telepathic? Because we see that she has the ability to
stop that fan.
Yeah. And do whatever she did to those guys.
You know, it seemed like she didn't have the words for a while. Like, just the way that she was behaving, like, it looked like she didn't know what to say and was only figuring it out as she went. Like, it almost felt like that it's sort of a classic alien story where they, like, slowly learn the language as they hear people say it. And, yeah, start to mimic. So, like, he said 11, and then she was able to say 11. Mm. She couldn't say, I'm 11. She just
pointed to herself.
She knew the motion, 11.
Right. I agree. And we're not sure, is this somebody who has always been in whatever place it was? Is she human? Is she somebody's daughter that we might know?
Sounds like you have a prediction there, Roxy.
There's a lot of stuff going on with her, but I do think, going back to what you said earlier, if Will is chosen, maybe when if somebody originally grabbed 11 and it was a pretty young girl, they tried to chop off her hair, tried to make her more
recognized,
and tried to make her more masculine to fit whatever mold they were trying to fit of somebody who had previously existed.
She's roughly the same height as Will and about the same complexion, like that pale.
Right. Yeah. But it didn't seem like she was let go. It seemed like she escaped somehow.
Oh, yeah.
So that was interesting, because I was thinking maybe she reaches a certain age and she's no longer viable for something.
And also, if you think about the parents, we have Joyce, she's a single parent. Hopper, we don't know who... We find out that he had a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know who...
We find out the daughter died.
Yeah, we don't know who that... Right, died.
Who the baby mama is.
Who the baby mama is, who the wife was, or what his situation was.
That could have started his drinking, because he said, you know, everyone's like, oh, you're drunk.
Do we think that... Sorry, this is jumping around a little bit, but it just came to me. Whatever this weird flubber thing is, do we think that maybe it has to run off of a child, and when it was missing this one kid, it had to get another one in order to function or survive?
Or is this collecting things?
Or maybe they're multiple, but maybe they always need some sort of heartbeat or something that is alive in order to be alive.
Or maybe she was, like, being, like, stored and, like, prepared to become whatever this monster was.
And is the monster helping her escape?
Yeah. And if they busted out together, because they said, like, so whatever this monster is, and in fairness, we haven't seen her and the monster in the same place at the same time.
No idea.
Could theoretically be the same thing.
Ooh.
But if they're trying, if they're, like, experimenting on her, if, so, like, Roxy, I think you were hinting at, you think that she is Hopper's
daughter.
I could see that.
Well, them mentioning both things, us seeing her and the mention in the pilot. Yeah.
If she died, like, a small town way that, like, a lot of kids just die, it's like swimming in a lake nearby. If they drown, brain damage, and okay, the kid's dead, but there's a lot of ways to bring somebody back to life, quote unquote, even if they're brain damaged, that could explain why she's not able to really talk.
And why she has other powers.
Yeah, anything with the brain, like, is just like one little science experiment away from powers and telepathy.
But we have no idea how she did or how they think she did die, or even if there is a connection here, if we're reaching.
Yeah.
But it could be, or maybe he could, there could be a bunch of children, and one of them is his daughter, and we haven't met her yet.
Yeah, like, yeah. 11 might know where
12.
His daughter is. Yeah, you know.
11 meets 12.
I mean, you could find Will, and he's got 12 right there.
Right, right.
Chief Hopper and Mr. Clark are going to end up becoming buddies and working together.
Because you think Hopper's actually a good guy?
I think Hopper's actually a good guy. It's just like that good. He probably wanted to be a cop for all the right reasons, and just stuff happened. And
a little lazy, maybe.
I mean, the fact that he lost a daughter, I'm totally on board. Like, he was probably a great cop, and then he lost his kid. You could see, like, as soon as they found the bike.
Yeah.
Because he was sort of, I think he was sort of set on, like, well, he's with the dad or a relative I don't know about, or he's running away. But as soon as he found the bike, that implies that the kid was not doing this intentionally, because you don't leave a bike behind. Then he went into work mode.
Right.
They went to the house, and he's finding the little clues on the door handle, and then going back, and like, he was so into it.
It's also important to mention that we get a sense of the town here. We talk about, I know that this was in the trailers, but we talk about the 99% of kids are with a relative or whatnot, and it's just that 1%, and she wants to know what happens with that 1%, and he's like, not the worst thing that ever happened here is an owl went at whoever's hair. So we know that this is a very safe place. So even if something supernatural did happen to his child, he is clearly not under the impression that it did.
Yeah, I'm starting to feel like he is somehow connected to this case in other ways, maybe with his daughter, because like you said, when he found the bike and then went to the house and he just came out and was in total work mode. So to me, I kind of feel like there's similarities between this case and his daughter's, maybe, that we haven't gotten to yet.
But if I could agree with you, but the problem is, if that was the case when initially Joyce went to him and said, this is what's going on, I feel like it would have clicked a little more. Like, oh, my daughter went missing too. Oh, this is what happened. She didn't come home.
Yeah, but if he's been spending he said he's been in charge for 4 years, so let's assume it's been 4 years since his daughter died, drinking and being like a person who's like, mornings don't bother me kind of guy, then I don't think his initial reaction would have been boom. But when he got on the scene and saw things that, you know, he's thinking it's a young boy who, you know, boys are trouble, boys run away, boys do this, and he didn't know Will like his mom and his friends knew him as the kid who would never do this.
And you put your daughter on such a pedestal, you're never thinking like, oh yeah, this is just out here happening to everybody.
Maybe, it just feels like maybe, or maybe this case is just what's, you know, really going to bring him back to life from his daughters.
So at the end, we see the boys. They are like, well, you know what? We're going to do this.
Giant walkie-talkies.
I loved it. This is probably going to be my favorite part of the show, is their journey of finding Will.
I love the gang.
Yeah.
I want to be part of their friends. I don't know how I get in, but like, I would like a Facebook invite right now.
I have a bike. Just tell me where to meet up, guys. Okay.
Rox, you have to defeat the Demogorgon. That's your rite of passage.
Let me write this down. One more time. Defeat Demogorgon.
I'll do the protection spell. You do the fireball.
All right, cool. All right. Boom.
There was a cool drop after they set out on their bikes. Like, I was talking about Easter eggs. And so they mentioned it twice, that they have Will's copy of X-Men 134. Mm-hmm. And geek mode just like set in. I was like, that issue sounds so familiar. And I double checked. There's two things that are very interesting from that particular issue. One, the smaller one, is it centers a lot around the Hellfire Club, which is like it's an evil organization that's like planning stuff against the X-Men. They have to fight. So like we've got our little mysterious company lab. But more importantly, it's the first appearance of Dark Phoenix. Where Jean Grey gives into her dark side and like converts. So you're talking about a telepathic woman who gives into the evil that she can be. And meanwhile, we've got the kids find 11.
This is where you're getting the telepathy from.
Yeah.
That's where you stole it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that, and she stopped a fan with her brain. Yeah.
And that also.
And that also. And the fact that she did it. Yeah. Like,
And then, I think that's where we're...
She was real proud of stopping that fan.
She was like, oh, you're so annoying, like, fan.
Move away maybe from that's you, a power. Maybe either that's a power she was capable of before and why they chose her, or she was not capable of and now is based on something they did to her.
Right. Like, are we going to meet? Is this show going to turn into, like, are we going to meet X-Men like characters? Is
it's a great question.
What they're turning these kids into? Are they specifically getting certain people with DNA based off, Joyce and Chief Hopper? And
we know that this is the horror genre. Is this also the supernatural genre? Also a superhero genre? Like, we don't know exactly where we're going.
Because it gives me all of that sci-fi. I get that we literally jumped. Like, it takes a lot for me to jump from watching a movie or something.
It could be all of those things. Mm-hmm. I mean, stranger things have happened.
So the kids are running outside and they bump into Eleven, and it's this weird standoff. They don't really know what to make of her, but they're all intrigued in this.
Especially Mike.
Yeah,
he was staring hard.
Well, I think that's because it's one of two things. It's either, oh my God, there's a girl in the woods. What?
Yeah.
Or it's, we know her because she's from our town. And if it's, we know her and we thought she was dead, that's like seeing a ghost. And if it's, this is just a girl in the woods, it's still enough of a reason to have your jaw drop. So I think that it's one of those.
It's also, it's a girl who has a shaved head,
right.
Which is especially...
Who they might think is a boy also.
Yeah, but it's especially unusual, I think, in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And she's wearing a clearly oversized shirt that is not meant for her. Like, this is somebody who is lost. Clearly there's something wrong.
And they're looking for somebody, and that's who they find. So, and they also, just before this, said... The last time one of our friends was here, he disappeared. Do you guys realize we're walking right into that?
Yep.
Maybe they think she took him. Maybe they think she's the monster. Maybe they think she's a victim.
Interesting, when she ran to those woods.
Yeah.
Like when she ran out of that diner, those were the woods that she ran to.
Because is that home?
Well, I want to get into watching this next episode. So before we do that, I want to get some final thoughts from you guys. Because I know we didn't even talk about Nancy or Steve.
So you know this is going to be what my final thought is, because I am all about Nancy and Steve shipping it now. Would it be Neve? Stancy?
Ooh, Stancy.
Stancy.
Fancy.
All right. Stancy is fancy to me, because honestly, I'm loving this little couple. Who doesn't know a little... freak boy like Steve, who's just thinking
about
this.
I feel like you've dated a Steve
before. Oh my God, I've dated so many Steves before. I dated all Steves forever. And I don't trust you, Steve. Hear my words. I don't trust you, Nancy. You shouldn't trust Steve either. He wants that V card. I know he does. But for now, I'm liking their relationship. I think Nancy is awesome, and I love that she's still studying, staying in school, guys. So I'm all about their relationship. I can't wait to see how it goes.
Wait, stick on this, Nancy and Steve. Did y'all think? I don't know. Like, at first, I thought Steve was a dick, but then when he was pushing for that V card, instead of leaving, which a dick would do, he sat and, all right, what was that?
And she but he already has Amy's and Tommy's and Molly's. Bye, and
Becky.
Whatever.
Bye, Becky.
Becky with the good hair.
Yeah.
Well, that's the rumor anyway. He's just not dispelling it.
Oh, you don't think Steve's all about that?
I think he's all about pretending it is.
Okay. Yeah. Ooh. I mean, if you have that reputation, you might as well. For a guy, you can
own it.
In the
80s, especially.
For a guy in the 80s, you can own it. For a girl,
I see you, Steve. I might be the only one, but I see you.
So do you think he's going to hit the V-card and then,
back
and then like, leave?
Do I think what?
He's going to like take the V-card and then just walk away from
her? I don't think she's going to let him, because Nancy's got more class than that. She's not... I think they straight up said slut. She's not a slut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He didn't give her that. I think I was very similar to Jesse, where I was just like, this guy's a dick. And but then like... In the bedroom scene, like, he's being really... Like,
he's being really
maybe,
cute.
Like, he wasn't ever, like, too aggressive.
Yeah.
Like, he was playful.
Mm.
And, like, he never pushed it too far.
He broke into her house in her window when she told him not to and she needed to be studying.
What's his name on Clarissa Explained It All, all the time?
They were making out in their bedroom. In her bedroom.
Those are my final thoughts.
I agree with Roxy. I do like Steve and Nancy together right now. I'm feeling it. And
Stancy
is fancy. And I have a feeling that somehow this whole disappearance, and there's a lot of similarities between the game that they were playing and then what happened afterwards. So maybe if we're in this supernatural world, maybe the game kind of chose Will through that way or something.
Dictates it.
Yeah, maybe it's something to do with the game they were playing.
I think there's a lot to with building off that, like, not just the game, but, like, the way that he plays it, that fairness, that, like, fighting for a team. Like, I think it's such a, leaning on that 80s theme of, like, a bunch of kids coming together to accomplish something. Like, it just reminds me so much of Goonies and stuff. Yeah. Like, I think this little team is going to come together to, like, find Will, save Will. I feel like the number 11 is going to be really important because I think whatever... whoever the 10 are that came before her is going to be... either they were completely just disposed of, and that's why she, like, she found out she was going to be disposed of and ran away, so she didn't have to become another test subject that's thrown into the trash heap. But either we're gonna see those 10 at some point, or Will is going to be number 12, and that's going to be a really scary moment.
There when could that already be a 12, appears. Though. There could be a 12, 13. I mean, if they only have one person at a time, then maybe it will be 12. But they could have an entire army.
That's true. I don't think it's the last we've seen. Somebody else is going to have a tattoo before the end of the season.
I feel 11 is going to really connect with the boys, and the boys are going to be what makes 11 open up and take them on this journey. And I don't know. It's I feel like we're going to have three different search parties for Will. I feel like it's going to be the kids, the parents, and Chief Hopper, and then the lab.
The lab. Yeah.
The lab.
And Jesse, I know you're going to be really upset if you don't talk about your favorite part of the episode as a DJ.
I know you wanted those. Because Chief Hopper, not Chief Hopper, Mr. Clark had the blue 10X headphones, y'all, and I know y'all remember them from back in the day. Those blue when you would have to sit inside, or like even when you would have to go to like the nurse and you'd have to put you do the hearing test. You know?
Yeah. I love those headphones.
I geeked out, like, because those are the little things that really make shows. There are a lot of shows that are out today, and you know, you'll notice certain things. You're like, there is no way that was around back then, or they didn't even make that car back then. But the fact that you can tell they really went back from the vests to the hats. Yeah. They really went back and they catered to that.
They made it very authentic to the 80s,
and I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Everything, the costumes, like Nancy's friend with like the frilly collar.
closet was just and Steve's polo. I can't
even down to the logo of the show though, the title Stranger Things with this font and everything that
and the fog coming up in
it.
And the song,
oh my god, this font, like the logo is so like that's like I didn't
Steven
even
Spielberg
when I saw this trailer, because the trailer was the first thing I even knew about this show. It got me so excited, and the trailer, that font is just one that you see on the cover of a whole ton of sci-fi novels. Mm-hmm. Like that font choice alone got me excited because it just says so much about how much Netflix has been careful to do this as a show. They know the fans of an 80s era sci-fi story is going to enjoy.
And that they're catering so much and taking care of the details. And the fact that it wasn't a book. This isn't original content. This is something that they create. And the fact that they could extract that feeling, that tone from the 80s, y'all, I'm here for it. And we gotta watch the next episode because I'm too excited. The next chapter.
Yeah.
So we would love for you guys to help us out by subscribing to Netflix YouTube channel here at youtube.com/Netflix. And also, please make sure you guys hit us up over at iTunes. You guys can download the podcast for free. Just search Stranger Things After Show. Also, make sure you guys stay in contact with us. You guys can keep in contact with me at DJ Jesse J across all social media.
You guys can find me everywhere at Roxy Stryer.
And you can find me at the Tiana Hobson.
I'm at that Zach Wilson.
Boom. To check out more after shows like this, hit next to see Chapter 2.